Dan Levitard, if we're really being honest about it, it's just a giant piece of shit.
To the Big Suey.
Bald Eagles.
A podcast exclusive that none of our bosses asked for.
More sports.
More work. Less pay.
I haven't stopped talking in a month. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Just when you thought the show couldn't be more diluted. Bam.
Last time I listened to this show.
I haven't listened for years.
Now here's the marching band to nowhere.
Am I missing something? What am I missing?
The end of the story.
Fat face.
Chris Fallick.
It's Felica. You made him a penis.
And the habitual liar.
I didn't ask for any of this.
You asked for all of it.
The Big Suey.
I'm Chris Cody, BSPN.
Hard to make a good turkey.
Yeah, well, I make a beer brine. I inject it. And then I get the rub. Before I do anything, I brine it and then stuff that thing with whole bunch of garlic and shallots and lime, lemon and oranges. Nice. Very wow. Citrusy.
Roy Bellamy is genuinely proud of his Thanksgiving bird. Look at the look on his face. He can't keep the smile off. Hey,
this is unbelievable. I am going to demand that the show start right there with an ebullient Roy Bellamy, which is something that none of us have ever seen before. Talking, please give us more information. My mouth was watering. I've never seen you this excited. And nor have I seen you publicly exhibit pride by saying, yeah, I'm a badass when it comes to making a turkey. I also didn't know it was difficult to make a turkey. And when you said filling it with garlic and shallots, that sounded excessive to me. That sounded dangerous.
Yeah, well, Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday. And for the past half decade, I've been doing the turkey. And it's been very, very well received by everybody who's had it. I try to several different ways, but the best way has been stuffing the cavity with garlic and shallots and rosemary and oranges and lemon and putting a beer injection inside the meat. And then
Greg Cody does that every night. Every night, Greg Cody puts a beer injection inside his belly.
In his veins.
It's
yes.
True. Yeah, unfortunately.
Greg,
that does sound great.
Don't you make an incredible? I heard him say that's where we started with him saying it was a well received bird. Cody, isn't your bird also well received?
Yeah, I have to brag a little on my deep fried Cajun bird. I also make a traditional oven bird, which is okay, but it's second fiddle. My deep fried Cajun bird, I season with a dry rub inside and outside, so that when I submerge that bird in the oil, it's a deep reddish brown in color, and it's just a beautiful thing. I was afraid of the deep fryer at first because I was thinking to myself, wow, how can this turkey not be oily? But it isn't, because it seals in the flavor. It's juicy. It's got a crispy outer crust of Cajun seasoning. It's just fantastic. Christopher can say that everybody goes for that bird much more and first before the traditional oven fried.
What kind of oil do you use in your deep fryer?
You know what? The go-to is the peanut oil, but it's so expensive. I have no problem just using sort of a combination of vegetable and canola oil. I've had great success with it.
Can you please tell me what you're defining as very expensive? Because I hope that we've trapped you here in one of your many Greg Cody denies he's cheap situations. How expensive is peanut oil?
Well, peanut oil generally is in the range of $12 to $15 a gallon. And to cook a bird in my deep fryer, you use at least 2.5 to 3.5 gallons. So you do end up spending, even if you use a cheaper oil, you end up spending more on the oil than on the turkey itself, which always strikes me as weird.
So what is the price difference, though, between peanut oil and whatever it is your store brand organic Winn-Dixie oil is? What are you talking about in price difference that makes you make peanut oil too expensive?
Right. I would say peanut oil is in the $12 to $15 a gallon range, and vegetable and canola oil is probably more in the, you know, the $8.99 type range. It's right. not... quite half as expensive, but it's Greg, pretty close
but
to
that,
it.
Okay, but a $9 difference, Greg, is not enough for you to appreciably change the taste of your bird. Come on, $9 is what you're getting in savings there. You're the worst, okay? You ruined Thanksgiving because
Wait a minute. BDC, bird don't care, okay? Bird don't care what oil you use.
And saying $9 is not I imagine finding $9 worth of change in the couch cushion. You'd be like, whoa, I just hit the lottery. $9 is a lot of money.
I'm not.
Thank you.
I am not saying that it's an insignificant amount of money. What I am saying is that Greg Cody has too much money to be concerning himself and, furthermore, making the bird taste appreciably less good because he's saving $9. It's an unnecessary savings. The bird doesn't taste better because Greg Cody saved those $9.
Okay, I object, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. Levitard over here, the expert, the great culinary chef, the master in the kitchen, is saying that my deep-fried Cajun bird tastes, quote-unquote, appreciably less good in oil. You've never had my deep-fried Cajun bird.
I have, and you said it. What you said, the peanut oil is better. You volunteered that. I wouldn't have known that.
I volunteered that a lot of gourmands, a lot of hoity-toity turkey cookers, Roy will back me up on this, the peanut oil is the Cadillac, and not that the Cadillac is the standard anymore, but what we used to call the Cadillac of oil is peanut oil. But I'm saying that through trial and error, I have experienced that lesser oil is perfectly fine, and the bird tastes just as good.
BDC.
Bird don't care.
And depending on what oil you get, is different temperature points. So that that affects how you cook your turkey as well.
That's true, too. I need a steady temperature. As you know, a turkey cooks about 3 minutes per pound. So if I've got a, 22-pound turkey, it's basically going to be done in just about an hour. And it works fabulously. It's the star of my Thanksgiving, as your turkey is the star of yours.
Well, I need to point something out because Mike Ryan has been throughout the entirety of this segment, as Greg Cody likes to say, like a mule eating briars, a giant smile pasted on his face because, and we need to celebrate this as a show, in 20 years doing this, I have never seen Roy this invested in a topic. I have never seen Roy care. He is leaning into the Zoom. He is eager to talk. He wants to say beer brine again and again. He corrected himself on how he puts the beer brine in the turkey. It's an injection. There's an actual injection. He went through all. Roy, I've never seen this side of you, okay? I've known you for a very long time. And I can honestly say, not the Panthers, not 90s baseball, not how good you are at Twitter, not Breaking Bad, not The Wire. I have never seen you as interested in a topic as the frying and the cooking of turkeys.
I don't mess around when it comes to food, Dan. I don't. I was telling a friend, actually, about something that happened at a remote a long, long time ago where we went to Gatsby's, where they used to have the Nick Saban show when he was a Dolphins coach. And you paid for food. I can't tell you how many lamb chops I had on your dime. That was a tremendous night.
Tell me more about this. I want to hear more about what we do. We did lamb chops. I don't remember. Where was Gatsby's? Where is that?
Gatsby's was next to 595 up in Davie. And I believe that was the day that Stu got Stewart's headphones because traffic ticket lawyer didn't call in.
Oh, wow. Ken Arnold didn't call in. So this was, Mike, see if you can find that sound so that we can play it. It's the original Stugatz shame. Do you remember the Gatsby's remote where we found ourselves in a situation where Roy was eating lamb chops like a pelican?
I'm not certain I remember. I don't think it was at Gatsby's, though. I do remember doing it with Ken Arnold. I don't think it was at the Gatsby's. I know the Gatsby's that Roy's talking about. I partied there. I would stay out there until 3 in the morning. I had a lot of great nights there, some of the greatest nights I've ever had at Gatsby's. But I don't remember doing that to the Hirsch Arnold team there. I remember it being in studio.
Put it on.
You guys got him?
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. We'll find that sound in a second at Levitard Show. Are you surprised at all that some of the best nights of Stugatz's life have been at a place called Gatsby's? We will get that sound in a second, but I've got to make some fun of Cody here. Cody, how many times during the local hour did you mention the Greg Cody Show featuring Greg Cody?
I think the over-under is probably like 2.5. By the way, it's the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody, not featuring Greg Cody.
I like it better, you know, my way. You could
let's get on brand there.
Stugatz likes to say, you do it your way, I'll do it my way. I just want to understand, because this is something, our friend Jeff Miller was in town with the Los Angeles Chargers, and we have known Jeff Miller since Greg Cody was a Cub columnist, and I was like an intern at the Miami Herald. And Jeff Miller looked at me sideways when I explained to him that our audience is so loyal that they had made you and a conversation with your son one of the biggest podcasts in America last week. And he looked at me sideways, genuinely confused, and I did not know how to answer him when he said, why does Greg Cody care so much about clicks at his age? Like, why is he? I did not know how to answer him, really, because I'm like, well, I guess it helps him hold on to value at work, or the feeling like there are very few metrics that measure how a newspaper columnist at 65 is impacting his newspaper. And if he only gets clicks from stories about our show, because you told me that that got like more than hurricane coverage last week, that just your article about it. What's the answer to his question?
I'm competitive. You know, I still take pride in my work. When something I write, whether it's something about the show or something about the Dolphins, gets a lot of eyeballs, that makes me feel good. When a podcast I do sets up a personal record for most downloads, that feels good to me. And, you know, I've always been a competitive guy. I've never been a great athlete, but back in the day when I was playing tennis, I wanted to win. When I was,
These are normal human things that you're saying. He was more questioning just the sheer obsession that you have with it. Like, it's not merely that you're competitive. It's that you can't think of much else. Like that, that you are thinking of your Chris, how often is your dad just bringing up his podcast around you? And do you guys have anything in your lives that is a bigger father-son bond right now in terms of how much your father cares to talk about it than the podcast?
He sends me many updates of the downloads throughout the week, way more than I ask for.
Only when they're good.
Does his conversation about the downloads usually, is it something that he talks about more than his granddaughter?
I won't put it there. It's close, though, which is not a should be.
What does he ask about first, the podcast or the granddaughter?
I don't want to go down that. Like, I feel like I've gotten in enough trouble the last week.
We're skirting on dangerous territory.
Billy, who do you imagine, Billy, when Greg Cody says he's a competitor and he's competing? Who do you imagine that, name names, who do you imagine, Chris, do you know the names? Like, would you happen to know who your father's quote unquote rivals are at the Miami Herald, where he's being competitive because he wants to be better than somebody for reasons that might be petty?
Well, are we talking about clicks or downloads for the podcast? Because the podcast, he has higher aspirations. You hear Dan Patrick, you hear Tony Kornheiser, you hear Levitard Show. In terms of the people he's like looking at when he's finding his show on the list. As far as clicks, I don't really get into it as much as who he's competing with at the Herald over clicks.
I feel like Greg is trying to push out some of the young bucks. Like, he had a thing with Clark Spencer, and then Clark retired, and that was like a minor victory for Greg. Now he has his sights set on Jordan McPherson, and he doesn't want him to climb over him.
No, not at all. Clark Spencer's one of my best friends, and happily
you hesitated.
Retired.
You hesitated. Yeah. There.
Barry Jackson. No. Barry Jackson. Are you going after young buck Barry Jackson?
Barry's not that young anymore, and no, I'm not. I'm not a competitor with anybody. That relates more to my podcast. I'm not ashamed to say that my podcast is by far the most successful of any of the Miami Herald sports podcasts.
I'm not ashamed. That's not bragging.
It's just fact. I'm proud of that.
Not
I'm
ashamed. That. You shouldn't be proud of that.
That's genuinely one of the successes of my career, coming so late in my career, is that largely through the popularity of my appearances on your show, my podcast has been wildly successful by Miami Herald standards, and I'm happy about that.
I don't think he cares about the Herald. I think the people he's looking at are exactly the people that Chris has already mentioned. He is checking out Stupidity. He is checking out Mina Kimes. He is checking out Pablo Torre. He is checking out the Mystery Crate, South Beat Sessions, and he wants to beat all of us.
Okay, so it's us. We're yes. We're your competitors. Well, I hadn't realized that this was going to blow up in my face this way.
No, here's what it is. And I do look at the rankings. Apple has a top 250 rankings every week. If I'm in the 250, I'm thrilled. I don't care if I'm 238.
You're not lying.
If I'm in there, it makes me happy. And believe me, last week was an abnormality. You know, most weeks I'm happy to be, you know, 147 or 88 or whatever.
Well, we are, as we've told you many times, and we've been floored by it, like legitimately floored. And for years we've been floored by it. The way that you guys support our nonsense at every turn, the way you guys are soldiers for us, like you'll fight anybody who dares disparage us. And so the idea that you guys would be this kind of loyal is a little bit nuts to me, given that we're a sports radio show. Like, it's just a silly thing that we do. But Cody, the way that you care about this is such, and I don't know if I'm guessing most people have noticed who are listening to this, on Greg Cody Tuesdays, it's been very frustrating beyond the normal reasons of him always coughing and him just not paying attention, his microphone not working, and him just trying to bother me at every turn. It's been very hard to get Greg Cody Tuesdays to feel the same. I think it's the biggest hit we've taken in the pandemic in terms of chemistry on the show, because in the 2 hours that we're now doing on terrestrial radio that you could feel us boxed in by everything, there's just so little room to get to Greg Cody in a way that allows us to do the show the way we normally do. You've probably seen and felt some of this with Billy, too, being out of the studio, because it's just hard to hit the notes. But what we just did with Greg Cody, talking about his podcast for that long, he does not care if he says another word today. Like, I'm not kidding you, Chris. Am I wrong about this? Like, your father,
maybe
as long as he gets to talk about some Tua in the local hour, and as long as he gets to talk about his podcast, if I let him talk about his Lobos right now, he would leave the rest of the show. He wouldn't pay attention to anything else that happened around here for the next couple of hours.
He already texted me during this segment saying, love this promo.
Yeah, no, I'm sure of it. It's why I do it for you, Greg. This is the reason.
It is time now for a weekly update on our favorite team, Rex Lobos. Here is their head coach and president of football operations, Greg Cody.
You stay, Grady Scott.
Well, everybody, Greg's Lobos does not have much good news to report, I have to say. The Lobos have endured 4 losses in a row. We have free fallen from the edge of playoff contention to likely not contending. Have we given up yet? No, because we're the Lobos. But, you know, I don't like to make excuses, which is a prelude to me making excuses. We had Dak Prescott as our quarterback. We lost him. Our top draft pick was Michael Thomas. He's barely played and barely produced all season long. We have 2 of the best running backs in the league in Aaron Jones and Chris Carson. They've both been in and out and injured a lot. So genuinely, straight up, we've had bad luck. Having said that, we're the Lobos. We don't give up. When things get hard, we fight harder. And if you don't think the Lobos are going to win the last 3 or 4 games of the season and eke into the playoffs and then make a deep run, you don't know the Bos. So, you know, stick with us, Lobos Nation, because we ain't done yet. Right. And there'll be more to come.
Oh, boy. An update. Needed one.
Lobos.
Who's the MVL? Lobos. Who's MVL right now?
You know, Stugatz, that's a tough question. And the fact that it's a tough question this deep into the season hurts me.
He can't name his roster. He can't name his roster.
No, I certainly can. My quarterback situation is a nightmare. You know, I think I started Derek Carr last week because, you know, when you lose Dak, It's a steep fall to whoever you sign off the waiver wire. Aaron Jones might be leading my team in points right now, but the MVL is still a contentious race. We're going to say that.
All right.
Mike, you have been producing this show for a long time. Billy, you have been a Greg Cody observer for a long time. Have we lost him for the remainder of the show because he is just so pleased with himself that he's been able to talk so much and advertise the only things he cares about that we won't get anything out of him the rest of the way?
Well, Greg, do you have a back in my day today?
I do. I have a low confidence back in my day, but to Dan's point, I'm so satisfied right now. I'm laying back in bed smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, we've lost him.
I don't know. I feel like this has been a good hour for Greg. I feel like he's just starting to cook with peanut oil, as they say.
Yeah, I really am. He's got that right.
Let's play that sound. I'm not sure it was at Gatsby's because I think Stu Gatz might be right on this, that we were in the studio, those old waxy studios. And yes. For those of you who haven't been listening to the show, Mike, what do you think in terms of listeners that we have right now? Are more of them people who have gotten to us in the last 5 or 6 years, or more of them people who have been with us throughout the entire time? The
last 5, 6 years.
Okay, so most of the people in the audience haven't actually heard this, or they've heard us play it on occasion.
I think they've heard us play it. On occasion, this is a good callback. This is even predating me, being an intern.
Yes, you weren't even anywhere on the show. Man. Roy, now, at the time we were at that Gatsby's and you were eating all those lamb chops, were you working for the show or were you still somebody who was just showing up at the remotes to hang out with us?
No, I was hanging out with you guys doing college.
Okay, so you ate all the lamb chops. You
remember the first time I met Roy? Roy put his laptop next to mine. We were working a remote. It was like some 72 Dolphins reunion at a hotel or something like that. I was convinced Roy worked with us. It was only like several days after that someone explained that to me that the guy that keeps putting his laptop next to mine at our workstation is just a fan.
Think about what our crew is. It's just absurd. Roy just hanging out around the show. Mike just sort of hanging around the show.
He was helpful, too. He was acting as if he worked on the show. He was like giving me research.
No, he was always trying to help. It's why we ended up hiring him, not because I saw him eating all those lamb chops.
They were good,
delicious, I know.
Roy, the Gatsby situation that you're imagining it. So you're saying you're just showing up to a remote we're doing. Are there any people there? Like, were there? Because I remember this happening when we were in studio, and they were those big, clunky, like old 1980s headphones that weighed about 12 pounds. It wasn't like what
industry standard.
It was just ridiculous. Yes. And so I'm remembering this differently
beige.
Than you are.
That night, Stu Gatz's parents and his children was there. I believe Jerron was the engineer. Jerron Casimir.
Right.
Yeah. And old Adrian was the promotions guy. And yeah, that was a good night.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, because of the aforementioned lamb chops. But I don't think this happened that night. Now, Stu Gatz, set this sound up. Just, like, explain to the people how it is that we would do these segments. They were taped, right? You would pretend like you were taking a call from a guy from a financial firm who had just taped something, right?
It was the Hirsch-Arnold team, Kenny Arnold, and I can't remember the other man.
Mitch Hirsch. They were your good friends
at the time, even though you can't remember their name.
Yeah, back then when they were spending money with us.
I just
they
know
were
his name
friends.
Because my dad told me if I ever die, the first call you need to make is to Mitch Hirsch.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Apparently, Mitch Hirsch handles all my dad's affairs.
Sold them.
Yeah, he sold my phone. Hirsch.
So we used to do this at around, I want to say right after the market closed, we did a market report. Sometimes it was live, sometimes it was taped, it was taped.
But it was always tune out.
It is. And we've gotten,
except to your dad.
Except to my dad.
We have gotten no better in 20 years at those live spots. All of it is tune out. All of it is white noise. We're begging you not to listen to it.
Oh, no. HelloFresh works.
Yeah, it does. So 90 seconds, I believe, was the market report. And I would throw it to either Ken Arnold or Mitch Hirsch, and they would take it from there. And there was a time, one time, where I threw it to those guys and no one was there.
And so do you remember whether you were waiting for someone to actually pick up the phone or for them to hit a button that would play the taped Ken Arnold?
I think this was a live one.
Yeah, this sounds just judging by his anger, kind of sounds like this was supposed to be a live hit.
Yeah. Okay, and so here it is. Here is Stugatz now. This is, I would say, Stugatz, is this maximum angry? Is this as angry as we have ever heard Stugatz on the air
on
in
the
terms
air,
of
yeah.
an outburst?
On the air, yeah.
It was max angry. It was early in the radio station.
You
I
were
knew
insecure?
Much
you didn't like that
fueled
it, did,
by
it
a
sounded
lack of
unprofessional?
Sleep and God no, knows what else.
I just, they were Murph. Spending a lot of money, all of it, and it just was a very stressful time in my life.
Hold on a second. Before we play this sound, let's help the audience as Roy smiles even more than he did with the turkey. Let's help the audience on Murph. Roy, go ahead. The floor is yours. You've got the giant smile on your face. Who was Stugatz hanging out with?
Our CFO.
And well, not only the CFO, but I'm pretty sure one day I turned on the news and his office was being raided by actual federal authorities. Do you remember this?
They never proved anything.
Oh my God!
But that, you guys remember what I'm talking about, right?
No, no, but I believe it, which is just sort of goes along with Murph. My experience with Murph is he always seemed fun to hang around with. But then when it was during work hours, he was always suspicious that people were lying about the time that they were clocking. Let me just say, I got hired in February of 07 officially, and I wasn't paid until June. But around this time, he instituted an old clock that you would punch in and out of because he was adamant people were lying about their hours.
He always had purple teeth because of the red wine.
And when you got your checks, be sure to get them into the bank as soon as you get
them. Oh, it was a mad dash.
Sprint.
I remember when you guys were struggling. I had some meeting at a golf course, and I was asked to simply work for free, not to take a pay cut. Would you simply work for no money at all? Which evidently Mike was doing for several months joined.
But I was just happy to be there, man. Biggest show in radio at the time for me.
Did we accurately describe Murph enough?
Whiskey nose?
Yeah. I think we I think we nailed Murph.
All right.
Yeah, several noses, I think.
Yeah, rolled up sleeves, never buttoned up.
Pink.
Pink,
very
sun kissed, but with his complexion, very pink.
Kind of in terms of, I don't know, just general look. Chris Cody's not that far off.
I would say he's closer to Chip Kelly. Closer to Chip Kelly with a whiskey nose.
You would say Murph is, yeah.
Yeah.
Murph. I think that's really accurate.
Yeah,
Mike.
Slightly taller Chip Kelly with a whiskey nose.
Farmer's tan as well. Great. A lot of golfing. Is there a lot of golfing?
Scratch
golfer. Yeah.
He was?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sunglasses, also leaving the tan there on
his
face.
Well, the band, because he was on the boat all weekend.
And so that's who Stugatz was partying with, correct?
Yeah, and he was also running shit.
He's the guy I would meet at a place after Gatsby's.
Okay.
He was after hours Murph, no doubt.
The after party?
After hours Murph.
After one of the, so that's why you were saying it's one of the most delightful nights of your life isn't Gatsby's. It's not Gatsby's. It's what you don't want your wife to know about after Gatsby.
By the way, very nice to me. I only have the nicest things to say about him outside of him not paying me for several months.
I love Murph. Let's just say that night I had to douse myself in gasoline on the way home.
Oh, yeah, you've told that story.
You told that story.
Murph, yes. For those of you who do not know, it's the way that Stugatz got the scent of the strip club off him by going to the gas station.
Unfortunately, it didn't do anything about the body glitter.
Has anyone seen Greg Cody? Let's play the sound. You knew he'd be gone as soon as that happened. Let's play the sound of Stugatz. This is Stugatz rabid with rage.
Before we break, want to bring on my good buddy Ken Arnold, Everglades Capital Management, the Hirsch Arnold team. Kenny, how you doing today? Kenny. Waiting for Ken, trying to hook him up here. Ken, you with us? We'll try again. You guys got him? We'll take a quick timeout. You guys figure it out. Goodbye.
Yeah, that was in studio. That's pristine sound right there.
He hung up on the show.
Oh, my Stugatz. God.
Yeah, but what makes me think it was on remote, Roy, was the sound of headphones being dropped.
I promise you it was in studio, and Dan is right. There were these big industrial-type plastic.
How much they weigh?
Headphones.
12 pounds, 15 pounds?
Dude, I think these, heavier than
yeah,
that.
Yeah, these had to be like 18 to 20 pounds.
They had some girth, and that's why it sounds the way it sounds there.
You would put them on and your head would move.
They were helicopter pilot headphones. That's what they were.
That's right. That's a good. Yes. That is a good description.
I felt like it was in a chopper. Yes.
But ill-fitting. They would never fit your head. They would always slide down and crash into your collarbone.
Because they were too heavy. This right here, though, if you listen, I think I know the Stugatz well enough at this point to know all the things that happened here. First off, you hear some ambient sound in the background where it feels like what was going on air is some people in a studio talking while Stugatz is trying to maintain some semblance of professional. But I also really enjoy about this, and God knows, Mike has felt some of this, and it is a plague in my existence. When we're scrambling because we're disorganized and I have to filibuster, it's generally the places where you guys end up most hating me because I make the mistakes during the filibusters. This is Stugatz fundamentally incapable of stalling with anything that resembles a take, a thought, anything that a phone number. It's just Stugatz. Where is he? Where is he? Where is he? Where is he? F*** you.
Before we break, want to bring on my good buddy, Ken Arnold, Everglades Capital Management, the Hirsch Arnold team. Kenny, how you doing today? Kenny. Waiting for Ken, trying to hook him up here. Ken, you with us? We'll try again. You guys got him? We'll take a quick timeout. You guys figure it out. Goodbye.
I was so mad at Andy King.
Man, that sounds so much like a remote drop. It's crazy.
Roy, there was something at the beginning of this where...
Was that Sluggo on the board?
I can't remember. I was f***ing pissed, though. I think I just lost a fight to Dan.
An argument.
And I realized, like, I'm never going to win an on-air argument. This guy's too smart for me. I was frustrated. The sponsor's not there. At the very least, if I'm going to lose and embarrass myself on the radio, can the sponsor be there so I can get paid?
Traffic know? Probably screwed up during the break. Vicky!
Good times. Should probably do, you know what we should probably do with the Big Suey for a while? Just tell stories from those days.
I can't.
Legally. There's NDAs.
I was going to say, Stugatz, isn't there, I know that there's an Eden.
Oh, I'm
next
thinking
to,
about my marriage. I mean,
Stugatz, was Eden the place you ended up at? Because there's an Eden strip club like right near Gatsby's, I believe.
Oh, no. Not Eden. Child's Play.
You went.
It was solid Legend. Gold.
What is the story?
Oh, that's the site of the holiday party in 07.
It was. In 08.
What is the story behind one high-ranking member of our former management team calling you, was it nude from a tree? Like, wasn't there a story involving?
He was running from, man, I'm hesitant to say this.
Okay, wait
he
a
was
minute.
Running
talk,
from
hold
the,
on, let's talk
no,
around.
It's okay. I think
let's
it's, talk around. I mean, I think you can Google
it's
it
public
probably.
Record.
Yes.
No, it isn't.
No, I think it is.
At least the reports are. This made news.
It was on local TV.
It was.
Yes. Wherever
mean,
it was.
This isn't the time that Murph's office got raided that was on local TV. This is a different time involving a different person.
Was the office that got raided our office?
It was that big place in Presidential Circle.
Oh, okay. So we share the office. So you can't draw. You can't draw a direct line to Murph.
There is no direct line to Murph. The real estate. Timeout.
I mean, back in those days, there was a lot of fraud coming out of that building.
But I'm not totally sure. I think I have this right. I think I saw Murph giving an interview as federal agents were streaming into the building.
Yeah, but I think that was as an eyewitness. There were a lot of shell corporations in that building. Stugatz can back me up on this. I visited those offices twice, and the only people there were the 790 folks.
The entire first floor was that. We were on the third floor, I think. Maybe the seventh floor. I forget. We had a nice office back there.
I think it was a sigh of relief on the local news from
there
Murph.
This is how sketchy these people were. I'm not kidding you that they had on the side a real estate business. And
well, no, that was the main business. We were the side business.
Okay, fine. Whatever it is that was
we
happening.
We were the vanity project.
With that main business, my mom still complained about somebody from there that I gave to her that she said bilked her, an old lady, out of $100,000 in a real estate deal. that I think I can't accuse.
Good God. It's not exactly $9 in the sofa.
Built this too strong a term where she thought she could get $100,000 more
right.
for a property and that they were selling it low.
The other story you're talking about did not take place in the office. I'm not certain it took place in Florida. I think it was out of state in a forest in the woods. And it involved one of the, well, involved.
Well, you don't have to. This is the part I was trying to protect you on. The person
doesn't matter. I was going to say part of our senior management team.
A high-ranking person.
Yeah.
And a helicopter or two.
Well, he called me. He called me while being chased at night, running through the woods, hiding in a tree with police helicopters with big, huge lights, just searching all over the area for him. And he called me, and I was like, what the f*** do you want me to do?
This is, like, just keep in mind, we're not laughing at the circumstances.
No, we're laughing
that Sugatz is receiving this call and him just being like, what do you want me to do here?
So just imagine we are not laughing at the circumstances.
Be clear on that, okay?
Because the circumstances are terrible, okay? And so we're not laughing at that. We're laughing at the visual. Imagine yourself getting a phone call.
From a boss.
From a boss who is hiding in a tree in the middle of a state with police helicopters flying over him, looking for him, and him asking me for advice.
The desperation.
Think about that. I want you guys to all imagine this, okay? All of you listening to the sound of my voice. You're in the most desperate circumstance of your life. You're crazed. You're scared. You're in the aforementioned woods, crisscrossing helicopters, shining lights looking for you. You're in a panic. You need a guardian angel. You pick up the phone. How many names have to be on that phone before you choose Stugatz as the one that you are choosing to come and bail you out of this situation?
For him, it was just Murph.
Luckily, you guys were at the same spot when you received the call.
Neither of us answered.